All right. Well, with no further ado, I'd like to introduce our MC for this series this week, Chris Adams. He's a program manager on the Microsoft Web Platform and Tools team. Chris has been working on the Microsoft Internet Information Server product for 5 years. He's currently certified as an MCP, MCSA, and MCSE on the Windows NT 4.0 2000 server operating systems, and he specializes in IIS versions 4.0, 5.0, 6.0, and the upcoming IIS 7.0. And with that, Chris, it's all yours.
Thank you, Jason, and welcome, everybody, to today's webcast. I'm very, very happy to have everybody joining us here today. I'm hoping that we see the numbers grow a little bit. If not, the great thing that I can tell you right now is we almost have a one-to-one relationship with attendees to question answers, so you have a perfect opportunity to interact with us today via the question manager. You can do that, as Jason mentioned, down in the bottom right-hand corner where it says ask a question. You just type that in there, click that ask button, and we will have operators standing by waiting for you to ask that question and give you an answer. Today, we have an exciting topic. We've already talked about this week in the Microsoft.com operations series. We've talked about how they've done high availability and reliability. We've talked about change and release management at Microsoft.com, as well as some of the management and the configuration that goes in to the IIS and the actual web platform. Today, we have the group development manager, Scott Gaskins, here to talk to us a lot about monitoring and managing an enterprise platform. This is a very important topic with a lot of good information and talk about a lot of different products, not just a focus on IIS, but across the entire platform and how they use those technologies. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Scott and let him run with telling us about monitoring and managing an enterprise platform.
Thank you, Chris. Welcome, everybody. I'm excited to be here today to talk to all of you because we've got some great things that we're doing today in monitoring and managing and reporting on our enterprise platform at Microsoft.com. And I'm really just excited to talk to everybody about it. So without further ado, we'll go right into it. Joining us today will be Howie Akins and Will Lally. They'll be doing the questions or the answering of your questions today. And as Chris mentioned, we will address at the end any questions that don't get answered or those that I think everybody might be very, very interested in the answers to. So our agenda today is fairly simple. First thing we're going to do is go through an introduction of Microsoft.com, you know, why we think we are an enterprise platform here at Microsoft.com. For those of you who have been in the webcast the rest of the week, you will notice that these first few slides are pretty much the same as what you've seen already. So for those that are just going through review, I apologize. For those who have not seen it yet, I think you'll see some of the numbers are pretty staggering. So we're going to do an introduction. The first thing is, you know, why do we think that Microsoft.com is at enterprise scale? Well, with our environment, we have more than 115 different sites. So anything that ends in the .microsoft.com suffix is pretty much being managed by this operations team. What composes those? Well, it's about 1,286 databases and thousands of web applications in the background. We service about 250,000 requests per second, 700,000 concurrent connections with peak internet egress at more than 80 gigabits a second. That's a pretty staggering number when you really start thinking about how much bandwidth we're actually consuming when we're running our sites. That consists of more than 150 million downloads per day via our download center and Windows Update. On average, we have about 75 million unique users per day and 125 million unique users per month. The environment itself consists of about 1,300 servers, and actually, that number has grown in recent times, so we're going to actually update that and call that 1,600 servers. In three data centers with two content delivery networks that help us bring things closer to the user. It equates to about 1,200 web servers, not 950 in this particular slide. This is a little bit older slide, but it's actually about 1,200 and pushing close to 400 SQL servers with 50 infrastructure servers that we use to kind of manage the overall operations piece of Microsoft.com. Additionally, we're responsible for more than 500 lab servers for our development and test teams to be able to actually push things out to our customers, which would be you. Now, in addition to that, We process in our managing and monitoring environment more than 60,000 alerts per day on average. The peak we've actually seen there has been about 125,000 alerts on all of those systems that I just described. So while we really don't have that many servers, the things that we do with them are pretty intense. Additionally, we perform almost 185 million performance counter collections, 11.5 million availability tests, and we process and parse more than 1.7 terabytes of IIS logs every single day. In order to manage an environment such as ours where we're getting applications and content from all over the world, we sometimes don't necessarily know exactly what application is running. So the more that we can do in testing and gathering performance and getting all of the alerts, the better off we are in being able to respond to problems that actually happen. For our architecture, we currently exist in three data center facilities, two in the Puget Sound and one in the Bay Area. However, in FY06, we're actually planning on expanding that to 23 domestic data centers and going international by FY11. Now, the reason that for this period, we have not done that is it's been incredibly difficult with all of the content that we have on the site. Just on www.microsoft.com, we actually have about 5 million pages. They're constantly being updated. We get about 3 gigabytes of churn a day in that. And so moving things around all over the world gets to be a little bit dicey in making sure that everybody's got the most current data. We do perform load balancing, and inside of our data centers, we actually use network load balancing for all of our load balancing needs for all of our web servers and even for some of our SQL servers. And I'll explain that in just a moment. And additionally, we use two different content delivery networks to do load balancing via Akamai and Status, using Akamai's FirstPoint product and Status' ICANN product. We cross-host our web servers and SQL servers in multiple data centers. And again, as I said, we use network load balancing for web application clusters split among the DCs, data centers. And we actually put SQL Server behind NLB in certain instances for availability. We can do that in both read clusters where we're publishing to the back end of those SQL servers, and we can actually load balance across the SQL servers. And in certain instances, we actually use NLB for read-write applications where we're using log shipping in the background and only have one server converged into a cluster at any given time. It facilitates and failover that way to really provide us a robust availability architecture so that when you come to the site, you actually get what it is that you're looking for. And that's really important to us from that perspective. From a platform software solution, we are using all Microsoft products in Microsoft Windows 2003 Enterprise Edition, IIS 6, Microsoft SQL Server 2000, and currently we're moving to SQL Server 2005. We have several of our environments that are already up to 2005, and we're just getting some of our other legacy applications to adopt through at this point in time. We do use Windows SharePoint Services, Content Management Server, Microsoft Operations Manager 2005, the .NET Framework and ASP.NET version 1.1 and 2.0, and one of the really exciting things that we're doing in our production environment is starting the Dog Food Longhorn Server in December of this year. Now, that's one of the key points and one of the key aspects of Microsoft.com that we're really, really proud of. And basically what we do is interface with all of our product groups to start adopting things early in the dev cycle so that when it actually comes to market, it can be as scalable and robust for all of you out there to actually be able to use it. So, for example, with Windows 2003 Server, we actually were in production with Windows 2003 Server for a good portion of our environment a year before it shipped to the public. And as you can see, we're already doing the same with Longhorn Server, and there's some really exciting things coming in there that are going to facilitate those multiple data centers and transferring things around, as I was mentioning earlier. The monitoring components that we use, we actually have a diverse array of things that we use for monitoring components. As I mentioned before, we use MOM 2005, SiteScope, which is a third-party product that some of you may be familiar with, Cluster Sentinel, which is a product that was developed inside of Microsoft and is actually available in a older form in the Windows 2000 Resource Kit, and it's utilized in many different ways, which I'll go into in just a short period of time. Additionally, we use Active Directory heavily for part of our monitoring component and management component, and I'll discuss that as we go along as well. We also use Microsoft Identity Integration Server. Identity Integration Server is kind of a little known product, but it provides some really robust functionality that we use that's integral to our monitoring and management capabilities that we have, and I will go into that as well. Additionally, we have some home role tools that we use in the IIS log monitor. Remember I said we parse 1.7 terabytes of IIS logs a day, and we do that via some custom-written applications that we have. And again, I will discuss those a little bit more. We use WMI fairly extensively in some of our processes in order to get as much information and as much robustness in our monitoring capabilities that we have. And as well, we use Keynote, which is a third-party product some of you may be familiar with. Keynote actually is a third-party that monitors our site from around the world and really does give us some robust ability to determine what our availability truly is at the endpoints where all of you are trying to hit. If a data center or an ISP out in St. Louis or somewhere around the world is having trouble, that will be reflected in our Keynote numbers, and that way we can get a good representation of, you know, how the experience truly is for our users. So, the first thing I want to talk about is monitoring and reporting today. You know, what do we do in our environment that really we feel differentiates us from everybody else out there, and why we're trying to really drive these best practices out into the community at large? The first question you might ask yourself is, why do we have a development team inside of operations? You know, what's the purpose of that? Aren't you just ops? And the reality is that we found that, in any operations team that we've ever gone in and talked with, they have this incredible array of different types of management and monitoring solutions, and you walk into their network operations center or their first-year escalation team, and they're watching 15, 16, 18 different tools. So what we decided a couple of years ago was to step back and say, let's try and figure out a way that we can truly create a portal that allows us to manage and monitor our environment from a more top-down and holistic sort of approach, where we can actually correlate all of these different systems together real-time to truly understand what's going on in our environment. And the first thing that we found was that we really needed to get a handle on asset management. We found that we would, I won't say lose servers, but we would find that we didn't know exactly what servers we had and what they were all necessarily associated with at any given time. Because being an enterprise environment, a lot of times you do move servers around a lot, you do associate them with other applications, and that gets to be a very, very difficult proposition if you really don't know at any given time where all of your servers are and what they're being utilized for. So, the first thing we stepped back and we said was, how do we know what we have? And there are several key tenets to that asset management. How many servers do you have? That seems like a silly question to ask, but when you start talking about thousands of servers, to not know where one or two or ten are at any given time can really be a true problem. If an escalation happens for a particular server and you don't know who to escalate to, say you've got an alert on XYZ server, if you don't know who to escalate it to or you don't know what troubleshooting steps are associated with it, how do you actually do anything with that? And how do you know what's being impacted as a result? What do those servers belong to? This was one of the key things that we really, really wanted to nail. We wanted to not only know what a server was and where it was, but we wanted to know what it was associated with. Who was it associated with? Who is the primary escalation engineer? Who is the secondary escalation engineer? What property is it associated with? What cluster is it associated with? So we actually made a heavy investment in building a structure that would allow us to do this and to really manage and monitor our assets at a given time. How do you determine end of life? Move that arrow over here. How do you determine the end of life of a particular server? That's a really important piece, because when you start doing long-term capacity planning and trying to understand when do I remove my servers from production, when do I lose my ROI and I need it to upgrade, it's all based off of performance and how the server can be patched and what sorts of things can happen as far as if the motherboard goes bad, do we have replacement pieces and so forth. So knowing when end of life was really is really important for us. Additionally, you know, how do you plan for capacity? These are all questions that we had to ask ourselves, and part of that development of a structure of assets to clusters, to property, to people, to documents, to performance, to all of those other monitoring engines that we had, it was really important to bring all of that together for us. So that's the existence of the dev team that we've got on this side, was to try and figure out how we do that. So how did we do it for asset management? Well, the first thing we did was, unlike many, many places, and we're keenly aware of this, our operations team has control over our Active Directories. We actually took all of our servers, both in lab and in production, across multiple domains, and we put them into our own organizational units inside of the Active Directory. Now, granted, a lot of people can't do that. They don't have that facility because the network is run by someone else, and in our case, we have a lot more flexibility in that. However, for our purposes, what we did is we said, okay, let's put all of our servers into one place in each one of those domains. And now let's do just a crawl. We do multiple crawls per day. To crawl the entire environment takes about 4 hours, and as soon as it finishes, it starts over again. And we go out and we just ask the Active Directory, what's reporting on the Active Directory right now? How do we know what's there? Well, it's a great way to determine what server objects are existing out there. Likewise, we also know when something gets decommissioned. As soon as it gets tombstone in the Active Directory, our crawl will pick it up and understand that, oh, this server is no longer in the Active Directory. So we were able to then pull all of that information in and use MIIS, Microsoft Identity Integration Server, to synchronize that with the Asset Store. Remember I said we built a hierarchy of servers to sites, servers to clusters, to sites, to properties, to people. By doing that Active Directory crawl, keeping that data fresh at all times, we know what's in our environment. Yes, you do get outliers when something hasn't been tombstone properly and so forth, but we can find those really, really quickly with all the other testing mechanisms that we have. Once we've done the crawl and we know what's out in the Active Directory, we utilize WMI to go back out and ask those servers what they are. And we get a plethora of information in that. It's really amazing the data that we can pull off of those servers. We get things like operating system and all of the IP addresses and number of processors, amount of RAM, the services that are running on them, what service accounts or what accounts those are running as, are they set to auto start or not, all of the databases, everything that we need to know about those servers, we pull in. And then we synchronize that with the store that we have, so that we can keep that data fresh at any given time. Now, you might ask yourself, you know, is that kind of a heavy process? And the answer is really no, it's not. It's generally very, very, very fast on any given server. And if we're unable to communicate with a server on that particular crawl, say that it's down for maintenance or there's some other problem going on, we'll catch it on the next crawl. So it's really a nice way for us to keep the data fresh in our own tool set to really understand, you know, what is it that we've got out in our environment. Because for us, that was the most important tenet to being able to associate now all of those other things that we have.
Quick question for you, Scott.
Sure.
On the actual Active Directory, you mentioned that you create the organizational units. Is that per site?
No, actually, that's for our entire environment. We do it by the domains that are out there in our environment.
Okay.
So I don't need one for each individual site, but what I do need is to be able to say all of the servers that are in this organizational unit belong to Microsoft.com.
Okay. And so do you use group policy for any type of management of that organizational unit?
No, we do not.
We do not.
Okay. Any other questions?
That would be the only two I had.
All right. Perfect. So, now that we've got this asset store and we know what servers belong to and, you know, what services are being associated with which applications and which people are associated with those particular things, now we can really start drilling into platform and application type monitoring. Effectively, we have two kinds of monitoring, and many, many places have this very same thing, is that you have reactive monitoring. I've just got an alert. I know that something is wrong.
And we use a couple of different ways for doing that. The first one of the courses is Microsoft Operations Manager 2005. And we use MOM for alert and event collection. But one of the things that we made a heavy investment in is that we do not use full management packs. That may sound a little strange, but what we found was that because the management pack is trying to be all things and really be able to be very granular, many times what tends to come through is just noise. The events are, while interesting, not actionable by operations. So what we did is we went through each one of the management packs and we peeled out those things that we actually felt were manageable and actionable by operations. And those are the things that we apply in MOM. We do both software and hardware-based alerts. And then we work with our application teams to determine, you know, what are the application-specific alerts and events that we absolutely need to collect in order to be able to be successful in knowing when an application is having trouble. And one of the nice things about this is that going back to the asset store, now that we know that hierarchy of information, I can scope to any level of that tree, and I can see all of the issues that are going on a particular server, and all of the issues that are going on for a particular cluster, all the way out to an entire property and see, you know, is it something that's specific to this property? Is it maybe that there's a network switch that's having problems? So, you know, that's actually where the problem is and that's causing problems on the application. You know, being able to actually use that hierarchy as a pivot for all of the things coming in from all of our monitoring systems really gave us that sort of Uber portal, if you will, of all of the things that are being used in our environment. As far as performance collection, we also do that via MOM, and currently we collect an average of about 42 counters per server. That's where that 185 million counters a day comes in. In some cases, it's less than that. In some cases, it's many, many more. If I've got a SQL server with, you know, hundreds of databases on it, that number of counters is going to be reflected based off of the number of SQL databases that we have. Additionally, in the reactive monitoring space, we have a home rule tool that we call the IIS Log Monitor. And basically what it does is it goes out and grabs all the IIS logs and parses for all of the IIS errors. So we can actually start to catch application errors that were not defined necessarily in the MOM application-specific alerting space. So yet another level of resiliency and truly understanding of what's going on out in the environment, because that's where you tend to spend most of your time when you're monitoring is, you know, what's really going on out there. If I've got, you know, XYZ tool over here that's reporting something, but I'm not watching that one specifically, but all of my other things are saying that everything's green and happy, you tend to spend a lot of time troubleshooting, trying to figure out what's really going on. And by consolidating that all into one space, we really do get a lot more granularity and reactivity in how fast we can respond to and fix a particular issue. Now, on the other side, we have proactive testing. You know, you've got reactive monitoring where an event gets thrown to the event log, and MOM picks it up, and we end up taking a look at it and see what's going on. On the proactive side, we use a couple of different methodologies. Cluster Sentinel, which I mentioned, was included in the Windows 2000 resource kit, and we've made many, many improvements to it since then. But effectively, what it allows you to do is create a custom proactive application-specific test. In the case of Cluster Sentinel, this is not a transactional type of test. So if I need to be able to say, is this application able to render the page? Cluster Sentinel is a great way to do that. We can set it up on any interval that we choose, so it could run every minute, every 15 minutes, however you wanted to really do that, but truly be able to test whether an application is able to render. Additionally, the thing that's really cool about Cluster Sentinel is that we can do automated NLB cluster command and control with watermarks and so forth in the cluster. Say, if this one server is misbehaving, pull it out of the cluster and drain it out. But only if it's down to, you know, this 50% watermark. And that'll happen all automatically based off of the way that you set up your tests inside of Cluster Sentinel. Additionally, we decided that we should at least do a couple of automated tests by default. Say that a server gets thrown into the mix and there isn't an application-specific test, we actually do a couple of different automated tests, both for web and SQL servers. We do an automated ping test on both of those boxes, just to make sure that the server is actually responding. Additionally, on the SQL side,
we will do an SP who inside a SQL server to make sure that SQL is actually responding back. Just to make sure that if an application-specific test is not designed to illustrate that maybe SQL Server is offline, that SP who test on that server will absolutely capture that. And that was really an important piece of redundancy that we wanted in our cluster sentinel testing. Additionally, we use Sitescope. Sitescope, as many of you are aware, provides a really robust environment for doing both transactional and non-transactional type of testing. We do use Sitescope in certain instances for transactional application testing, where it's absolutely imperative that we're able to interact with the test. We really took a lot of thought about doing this, and then we pushed that data back into the Microsoft Operations Manager team, saying this would be a great piece of functionality to include into MOM to allow people to set up this type of testing. And really provide a Microsoft-based solution of transactional application testing. And they have put some efforts towards that, and they have a first version of it available, and we're working with them to make that even more robust as time goes on. Now, I mentioned earlier we also use Keynote. The way we like to look at things is that Cluster Sentinel and Sitescope really give us an idea of what the availability of our applications is inside of the walls of Microsoft. And that's an important distinction because we are inside of our data centers. We aren't testing any of our peering relationships or any of the things that are going on outside of Microsoft. So Keynote was a really important addition for our monitoring and management. Keynote is a third-party monitor, and they have 35 locations worldwide. They actually have a global 50, but currently we're only using a global 35. They have 35 locations around the world where you can set up a test, very much like Cluster Sentinel or Sitescope. They will do both transactional and non-transactional tests. And they will, on the interval that you specify, test your site. Now, this is an incredibly stringent test. If anything fails to render, a single GIF on the page does not render, Keynote tags that as a 100% failure of that test. So the availability number becomes, you know, a really, really stringent measure of how good are we truly. And we're extremely proud that we are able to, in Keynote, maintain a 99.81 availability number. Now, while that may seem low to some people, when you think about the stringent nature of that test, that's actually exceptionally high. And that's a really number that we're very, very proud of. And so, between these different types of proactive testing, we can not only determine application-specific types of errors, but we can even extrapolate now, is it inside of the walls of Microsoft? Are we having networking problems, or is it application-specific sorts of problems? Or is it outside of the walls of Microsoft? Is it, if we're not experiencing errors in Cluster Sentinel, then it's likely that it's outside of the walls of Microsoft, in which case then we have to work with our peering relationship in order to resolve those issues. So it gives us two layers of availability testing that's really, really important for us. And again, as I was saying earlier, taking it back to that asset management, I know that all of these servers are associated with this particular application. I can look at that availability number at any level in that tree. I can look at the availability of a server, of a cluster, of a service, an application, an entire environment. Really, really powerful from our present situation. And then, as I said, we've built some customized tools to kind of bring all of this stuff together. The asset management store is a key function of that customized tool, and this is where my team really comes into play. We use web services that we've written that know how to talk to all of those individual systems. They know how to speak with the language of Keynote, the language of Sitescope, and of MOM, and of Cluster Sentinel, and all of these different data sources, and pull all that data out. And then we normalize it into a common data schema so that we can represent all of that stuff side by side. One of the really, really beautiful things about that is if, for whatever reason, a particular monitoring element is unavailable, say that Cluster Sentinel goes offline or MOM goes offline or Sitescope is being upgraded or whatnot, we're not blind. We're getting events and alerts and performance data from all of those other pieces of our environment, and that's hugely important for us. It really gives us the ability to look at
all aspects of our environment into a single globalized UI. Now, I honestly wish I could show you what it is that we're doing, but we're working very, very closely right now with several of the product teams and a couple of other groups within Microsoft to actually be able to provide these tools out to you. And hopefully in the very near future, we'll not only be able to talk about it, but we'll be able to show you exactly what it is that we've done. Very exciting from our perspective. Now, I'm going to switch gears a little bit from how we do proactive and reactive monitoring and the asset management piece and really talk about, you know, what do we do with it after the fact? So the key element of being able to run an operation is to be able to look back at trends and look back at all of the things that have gone on over time, because many times that here and now position is it's obviously very reactive, but it's also too small of a data subset to really understand whether or not we're going to be having problems or there are massive problems that we don't see in the here and now. So, from a data collection perspective, remember I said we gather all of that information from all of those other areas, and that's really exciting for us because we can see various different types of testing and different types of information coming in. What we do then is we process all of those data sources nightly into a single data warehouse. We take a snapshot of the asset configuration database. And that's really key and important for us because now I can go back at any point in time. I can say back in June of 2004, how many servers were associated with www.microsoft.com? Okay, what were those servers? Were they, you know, quad 2 gigahertz boxes? Were they AMD 64 boxes? What were they? Now, what sort of errors were we experiencing at that time? What was our performance threshold at that point? Where were we performing in relation to today? And without that aspect of time, that's an impossible thing to do. So we wanted to make sure we snapshot that asset configuration database. And then we correlate it all with all the monitoring and testing information. Now, as you might imagine, 185 million performance counters a day, 60,000 alerts, 1.7 terabytes of logs, IaaS logs parsed, that's an incredible amount of data. So we do aggregate where it's appropriate. For example, with performance data, we will aggregate it up to a single daily counter, even though we collect it for every 45 seconds. We'll aggregate to a single daily counter, but we won't lose granularity of what we have. We'll take min and max. We'll also gather or calculate out the standard error and standard deviation so that we can then deterministically say, you know, even though this is an average of all the 45-second counters for the day, where were my outliers? What was my 50% range? And that's really important over time because if say you release an application at a certain performance level, say 25% CPU and you're utilizing X amount of memory, well, you may never hit your performance threshold of, say, the CPU is at 75% for the last 15 minutes. But over time, you've actually grown your performance. Now you're at 40% CPU utilization on average. Well, you've doubled your standard deviation, but you never actually hit a performance threshold. So without being able to do that, that really leaves you exposed to finding out that you have a problem when it's too late. And then, of course, you know, where needed, we'll keep detail. We'll keep detail of specific errors. We will keep detail of performance for short-term analysis. But we do a lot of aggregation in order to keep that data warehouse something that's actually queryable. Because of the amount of data, it would almost certainly grind to a halt eventually. And then from a reporting standpoint, in order to be able to provide that to all of our engineers and our users and our dev teams and our test teams and everything else, we utilize SQL reporting services. So, for example, one of the things we provide is a daily, a 30-day, a 90-day, and a year-to-date availability report. That availability report incorporates all the aspects of Keynote and Cluster Sentinel and so forth. And then one of the key pieces of that is I may have a lowered availability for a particular day, but maybe there were extenuating circumstances that caused that. So what we've enabled in that particular report is the ability to annotate what actually happened. You know, was it a DNS issue? Was it a router misconfiguration? What actually happened that caused that lower availability? So we can look back and say, oh, okay, that's why we were lower that particular day. Well, what will we do to resolve that in the future? Additionally, we'll do asset reports, just keying off of that same tree of information of what assets are associated with any given property or environment. Warranty expiration. We'll do performance trend reports, obviously. That's a really important one for us. Additionally, we do requests for change. One of the presentations that you heard earlier this week was around change management. And one of the pieces of that is to truly understand requests for change. You know, it's funny because we didn't do this for a long time. But when we started actually building tooling around being able to manage and understand requests for change, we started seeing that, you know, we would have way too many things trying to release on the same day, which was stretching out our resources and really making it difficult for us to respond if there was a problem in the interim or as part of those releases. So it's really given us the ability to spread large releases out and not have that kind of contention. Additionally, we have disk utilization reports and an IIS error trend. Now, those are the canned reports that we provide, but we understand that we aren't going to be able to scan every type of report that any particular group might need. So as a service to our customers, we provide DTS packages, data transformation services, to give them custom feeds of just their data, and then they can do deeper analysis on it, rather than giving them ad hoc query access to the data warehouse. For any that have managed large data warehouses, ad hoc query access can be very, very dangerous. A single query could potentially take you offline in your data warehousing needs. Giving them the ability to just suck that data out and use it for their own needs, we felt was a very, very important piece for them to be successful as well. Now, that's kind of a high overview of what we do today. Now, one of the key pieces that I do want to mention is that on our blog site, which is blogs.technet.com/MSCOM, there was one of the blog posts that specifically addressed monitoring and reporting, and one of the questions that came back was, what are the performance counters that you collect? What are the events and so forth that you collect? All of that information is actually in the blog post, and I encourage you, if you are interested in understanding what counters we collect, what information we collect, I encourage you to go and actually look at that data and truly understand, you know, what is it that we're currently collecting on, because that really, really is important for people. Now, move back to our slides here. So, monitoring and reporting in the future. Where are we going? One second, we're... there we are. Where are we going with monitoring and reporting in the future? Well, we've got some really exciting things that we are trying to go towards. And I wanted to share those with you because hopefully, as I said, we can actually expose the things that we do either via our products or via other mechanisms inside of Microsoft. We wanted to start giving people some food for thought on where we would like to go. And I truly, truly encourage you that if you have questions about any of this, or if you want to learn more, or just have a general interest, please submit questions to our blog, submit questions through this presentation, because it's truly important that we nail these aspects.
Hey, Scott.
Yeah.
Real quick, one question that you didn't talk about in what you're doing today, and when you're transitioning about the future. Somebody asked about SMS. Do you have SMS in your environment, and how do you use it?
Okay, so that is an absolutely fantastic question, and it's one that I specifically did leave off of the slide. And the reason for that is we do not currently use SMS in the MSCOM environment. Now, that may sound very, very strange to people, and there's a very good reason for it. We actually exist in hosted data centers. And in those hosted data centers, the people that manage them actually have SMS installed, and it's on all of our boxes to use it. However, one of the shortcomings that we have conveyed back to the SMS team, and they're working hard to resolve, is that the SMS agent can only talk to one SMS installation. And given that that's already being managed by someone else, and they are reasonably so reluctant to let us just start extending that and adding more functionality into it and grabbing more information, we just don't use it at this point in time. They are, as I said, working very hard to be able to resolve that so that it can talk to multiple SMS installations, at which time then absolutely it's one of our key charters to incorporate them into our monitoring and management situation today. So,
quick question.
Sure.
Active Directory.
Yes.
You use that today. One of the questions that comes around, you just mentioned it and brought it up, which is you sit more in a hosted environment, which is what a lot of our customers are going to have their web platform done instead of hosting it internally. Active Directory versus Atom. Is there any discussion on your end, like the fact that Active Directory, there's a lot of features that sounds like you're not using that come with that. Is there any discussion at all looking at Atom?
So, you know what? I'm so glad you asked that because I did forget to actually talk about this. The asset management store that we've created on our own side, guess what it is? Atom. For those unfamiliar, Atom is Active Directory for Application Mode. It's a little mini AD. But what we found was, and I'll be the first one to say this, having been around databases for many, many, many years, and I love relational databases. They're a wonderful thing. However, and this is agnostic and cross-platform, relational databases are not meant for all things. And one of those things is native hierarchies. You can do it. It's exceptionally painful to do. And so what we did is we stepped back and said, what we're looking for our tree to understand, those asset relationships is a hierarchy. Additionally, we wanted to incorporate functionality of inheritance and so forth. And Atom was just a natural fit for us in that respect. So when that Microsoft Identity Integration Service actually spins up and does that synchronization, it's talking natively to the same sort of structure, right? Atom is our application instance for all of our assets, and it's talking to the Active Directory, and it's talking with our global address book, which is also part of the Active Directory, to gather all of the information that we actually need for our system. So, yes, we do utilize Atom, so I do absolutely recommend looking into it if you're looking for that sort of functionality, or at least a scaled-down version of the Active Directory.
What does Atom give them, what does Active Directory give them that Atom doesn't? If they're trying to figure out that fine line, just with your knowledge of that, what is the difference? Why would they go one way or the other?
Effectively, it's just scale. Right? Atom has removed key functionality that Active Directory provides. And for those who are unaware, Atom is actually shipping free with Windows 2003 Server. Active Directory is just a much more enterprise-level solution for managing all of the assets in your environment, whether it be your network switches and your servers and all of that kind of stuff. So Atom does not provide a lot of that rich functionality that Active Directory does provide at the top end.
I got one more question. We're still on this topic. System Center.
System Center, yes.
Where does that come in? Are you guys dogfooding that or are you using it at all?
We have not begun dogfooding it yet. However, we are on the hook to do so. One of the things that we feel is our charter inside Microsoft is with all of our enterprise products coming out that we want to make sure that they are scalable and usable at this level. And so we are on the hook to dogfood all of those. System Center is right up there with that. Now, because of the diversity that you have in any enterprise environment, we're driving requirements back into them to be able to monitor or at least gather data from other types of monitoring environments. Because that's one of the problems that people end up seeing is that, it's either all or nothing. And this is not just in relation to MOM. This is a lot of the various monitoring solutions that are out there, is that you have to use our solution. You can't continue to use your existing solution or even during migration without having to monitor multiple things. And so System Center is absolutely something we're signed up to. As I said, we're getting ready to begin the beta 1 of the vNext of MOM, which is incorporating a lot of those System Center aspects. So it's an exciting time for us in that respect.
So, great. I'll let you go on.
Not a problem. So, what are we doing next? Well, we're making some heavy investments in truly being able to get granular about understanding what's out there. And one of the spaces that we're very excited about is configuration monitoring and management. We feel that one of the key things to truly being able to be responsive and not be in a reactionary mode all the time is to get a deeper understanding of what it is that we have out there. You know, now that we've made that investment in creating an asset management platform, you know, what's next? Well, I know that a particular server is associated with a cluster based off of our asset management solution. But do I truly know that it's exactly the same as all the other ones in the cluster? And that's where we're really looking to get deep and understand, not only from a platform perspective, but from an application-specific perspective. So what we're doing is we're defining an XML-based manifest that is configurable enough to, say, create after the fact when something is already out there, but also that we can provide guidance back to our development teams to say, when your application gets installed, when you create this latest hotfix, we want them to spit out that manifest of not only what it did, but what it's supposed to look like. And that could be anything, right? It could be registry settings, could be various versions of DLLs that are on the server, it could be XCs, it could be what's in the GAC. Any number of things that actually identify this as this server is supposed to look like this. And so we're going to create platform configurations that can be created during initial platform install or hotfix that say this is what the base platform installation should look like. SQL Server should be installed here. Our databases should be installed here. The database server should be set up this way. The IIS server should have these components installed and should be configured in this way. Additionally, that application configuration that can be created during the development cycle or after the fact, but preferably during the development cycle so that our test teams can also take advantage of this. You know, one of the things that we do in our tooling is we crawl both our labs and our data centers, and we give our testers the ability to associate those servers that they have with environments for those same applications that are in production. Now, that does a couple of things. One, when a product cycle starts, our PM teams can actually look and see, do we have servers associated in the lab and test for that particular application? If not, then they can go acquire those resources. But by creating these application-based manifest files, they'll be able to determine very easily whether or not the servers that they're using in the lab are configured in the same way that the data or the servers in the data center are being configured. And so you don't have these disconnects of, well, we had this particular version of this DLL in test, and now when we release it to production, we're having problems. Hopefully we can actually resolve those issues before they ever get into production. Now, the second piece of this is not a one-time shot. We don't just put it out there and check it once, because things change. As everybody out there is probably aware, things change and you don't necessarily know what happened. So we're going to collect on those servers and audit those manifests against what's actually on the server every single night. And potentially we're actually looking at doing it more frequently than that. But at this point we're thinking about just a nightly audit of what's out there and then throwing that event into the event log so that mom can then pick it up and forward it into our tooling so that now we actually know that, you know, this cluster is not configured properly or these servers in this cluster are not configured properly. And we could even then automatically remove it from the cluster because it may be causing some problems that are intermittent. Because one of the biggest problems that we've seen in the past is that a particular server is just slightly misconfigured. Maybe the version of the DLL and the GAC is actually the previous version. So you get these really strange intermittent problems and they're incredibly difficult to track down. So getting as granular as you need in those configuration manifest files will really, really help to understand where the problem is and hopefully before the problem actually exists. So that's one of our exciting things that we're doing in that space. The next thing that we're doing is application instrumentation. You know, this is a really tough space. And here's the common scenario. We have literally thousands of developers around the world submitting code and content to Microsoft.com. We don't always know what it is that's out there. So the problem with that is that there's incredible diversity in the way people think about how they instrument their application. they event in a particular way, or they log in a particular way, and it's different, just slightly or vastly different than everything else. And so what we're going to do as a development team inside of the operations team is we're going to build a common eventing and logging class, right? Taking that burden off of the development teams. And one of the funny things is when we present this to all of our development teams around, they are just tickled to death to take this off of their plate. They don't want to figure out how to event and log. They just want to consume something that is controlled by operations. So that's where we're going with it. This common logging class is actually based off the logging and instrumentation application block that is available on our patterns and practices site. And there is a reference to that in the resources at the base or at the bottom of this presentation. So I definitely recommend that you look at it, because not only is it a common application block framework, but it's also extremely extensible to add things that currently may not be available in the block itself. So we're going to define common methods for logging to the event log. One of the things we're really, really trying to get towards is that anything that goes into the event log from an application should be actionable by operations. And that really boils down and it takes away a lot of the ambiguity. When something comes in to our 24/7 team, many times they do a bunch of analysis that spend 15, 20, 30 minutes to determine that, okay, yes, this is an error, but it's not impacting the customer, and there's nothing operations can do about that. So being able to define, you know, what goes to the event log. Additionally, we want to be able to define, you know, that an application actually logs to a disk file rather than the event log, so that if we need to do long-term analysis, we can parse those things and we can start seeing those other errors that don't appropriately fit into the event log paradigm that we're going with. You could log to a database. Additionally, we want to enable the functionality to do deep application tracing, and gives operations the ability to use almost a rheostat functionality to say, go ahead and turn on verbose logging for this application, and let's watch it for the next few minutes, and then let's shut it back off again. But the key point of this is it's operations control. And what I mean by that is that we want to take the really difficult piece, and that is that something is going to the wrong state. I've got a non-operations actionable event going into the event log being collected, and it's spamming our 24/7 team. What we want to be able to do now is create an application configuration file that defines, outside of the actual code, what events are being logged and where they're going to. So if we find that something that we thought was going to be actionable by operations and was going to the event log is not so useful, then we can go into that configuration and we can change where it's being logged to without ever having to go back to the development team and have them crack open their code. And they were exceptionally excited that we wanted to do this sort of thing. So it's one of our big investments in the coming year to really create this single defined logging class that we can then put out on every single server in our environment, and all of our development teams that are developing on Microsoft.com can be confident that this is a common framework for how you log an event. And it really simplifies things from an operational perspective, as you can well imagine. Now, the next thing that we're going into is problem management, really getting deep on understanding what problems actually exist out there. You know, when you start talking about collecting events or alerts via MOM and running these application-level tests and all of that kind of good stuff, that's great for the here and now. But really getting deep in understanding what the problems are so that you can resolve them is incredibly powerful. So what we're really taking an investment in is learning from the data. Right? We have this incredible data store of things that have happened over the last couple of years. You know, really starting to do correlation of problems and issues across all of those data sources and really get deep in what those problems really are. Then annotating those correlations. Now, once you've got annotations of those correlations, much like we did in the daily availability report, is to start developing dynamic documentation. I've seen this problem before. I know that this happened on another portion of the site. Another engineer took care of it. this is what they did to fix it. That annotation actually comes through in the documentation as part of the troubleshooting steps that, hey, this happened over here 6 months ago. You know, so really getting some knowledge management around what is in the data. Because one of the problems that I see in large-scale data warehouses, you know, we keep this data around in perpetuity. The problem is that we don't actually learn from it. We actually look at it for short-term specific purpose, and then we never go back to it and look at it at a broader scale or take a look at it at a different cut. Now, as you can well imagine, and as many of the challenges are, we don't have a legion of analysts looking at this data. So how do you do that? How do you correlate those problems? Well, this is one of the coolest things that I'm so excited about going into in our world. And that is we are looking at employing a lot of the concepts that are in many, many of the games out there today and using an AI engine and genetic algorithms to crawl through the data and truly understand, you know, let the algorithms actually look at baselines and determine statistical anomalies and throw those anomalies to it. The reason I say we want to use genetic algorithms is we can actually teach those algorithms that, you know, yes, I have a spike on Tuesday in this particular application, but that's normal. I don't want that to continually come up as an outlier. So the algorithms can actually learn. Because ultimately, if we can get to this point of having algorithms that understand performance data or availability data or configuration data, et cetera, they can start bubbling up all of these things. So configuration changes, the genetic algorithm actually notifies the AI engine to say, hey, this has changed fundamentally. So notify all of the other algorithms to maybe cut their baselines and start a new one, and then do a comparative analysis between the two. Very, very exciting stuff, because once we can actually nail this down and we can actually get those annotations and start teaching those algorithms, what I would love to do is to take that, and this is a little ways out for us, but it's definitely on our charter, is to take those things now, apply them to live data, and start doing prediction of problems. That, you know, the algorithms have seen this trend before, and this was the ultimate outcome. Now, it's not going to be 100%, and it's going to take a very long time to start training these things, but really get proactive rather than reactive. And the first thing is to learn from that data. Very important for us. Now, lastly, one of the things I wanted to talk about, and this is actually closer to the near term than it is the problem management space was, but really going to the lights out data center type of concept, where we've made some heavy investments both financially and from a dev perspective to start enabling this lights out sort of a functionality. And the first thing that we've done is we have started to automate pieces of our environment that normally take hands to do. Normally take someone going out to the server and do that. So the first thing was on the new HP servers, there's a functionality called the integrated lights out. And effectively, it's a RISC chip that sits right on the motherboard, has its own network interface, and is completely outside of the operating system as a whole. So in the event that a server is unreachable on the network, traditionally, maybe the RPC service has stopped functioning or something else has happened, we can do things like cold reboot it directly through this interface. And we've tied all of this into our own tooling so that the owners or the primary engineers of a particular server could reboot it right from their desk, not have to create a ticket that the data center staff has to go out and actually perform that action. Putting that ability right into the hands of our engineers, and in some cases our first and second tier engineers, in our 24/17. You could power it off. Maybe the server's not in production yet and we don't want to be consuming the power, because one of the largest cost factors inside of a data center is power. Power it off until you're ready to use it. Correlatively, we can power it back on. But one of the really exciting pieces is to take all that performance data that we've got, correlate for an entire property, you know, on msdn.microsoft.com, at 2:00 in the morning, it's running at 10% CPU utilization, and you know they've only got this many requests per second, etc. Let's power down those boxes automatically and do automated power management. Now all of a sudden we're running at 40 or 50% CPU utilization on those boxes. Let's power up a few additional in order to manage that load. As you can imagine, for things like Windows Update or the Download Center, that could really save Microsoft and our operation a lot of money in power. And then the next piece is, you know, automated patch management. We're working with several teams, including the FMF team, to be able to define and schedule packages and define not only the package itself, but how long we think it's going to take. And then in our tooling, actually suppress that server prior to it being, the patch being started, or group of servers, even do those in a cascading fashion. Finish the package and test the package results, alert when the package fails, so that we could do automation of deployment of a hotfix or a particular patch at Thursday at midnight, and nobody is around except for the 24/17 to watch the event queues to see if something went wrong. So really exciting in automating that, because, you know, while it may seem that we are, as a tooling team, trying to make the job of an engineer obsolete, it's absolutely quite the opposite. What we're trying to do is enable our engineers to focus on what's coming next, to work with our development, test, and PM teams to truly understand what's being developed and provide that operational piece of, you know, why something should be scheduled or created in a particular way. And so taking those day-to-day mundane things that everyone has to do that seem to consume most of our day off of their plate and letting them focus on being truly engineers for what's coming next, is truly an important piece for us to be successful in the future. So, in conclusion, a couple of key takeaways that I'd like people to consider. Centralize as much as possible, right? You have 10, 12, 15 different monitoring solutions in your environment. What I'm trying to say is that's okay. The key piece is to try and centralize that, where those are all coming into a single place or a couple of places rather than 15 different UIs that you're trying to manage and monitor. As I said, we're really working hard to try and provide the solutions that we've put together, out to the public at large. And hopefully we'll be able to do that soon so you don't have to reinvent the wheel that we've already done here. Annotate correlations between key data sources. Hugely important, because if I'm looking back and I see that our availability was, 85% on a particular day 6 months ago, if I haven't annotated what actually happened there, then I don't have a point of context to understand what I need to do to fix that. And same with, you know, with existing data of various different data sources coming in. You know, correlate that stuff together and annotate those correlations so that you can truly start doing knowledge management going forward. Use both proactive and reactive monitoring and proactive testing. This gives you a more complete picture across the board of what's truly going on in the environment, where reactive monitoring might miss something, your proactive test might grab it, and vice versa. Determine what data is important. Don't just keep everything around in perpetuity. If you need to aggregate, aggregate it. If you think you need the detail, great, keep that. But truly go through and determine what data is important, because when you start talking about trying to do these correlations and understand the data, if you've got too much of it, it's a daunting task. You really just don't have the ability to get deep and understand what's going on. And then the last thing is, and this is my mantra, is learn from what you collect. Actually change behaviors based off of what you collect and what you learn. Because otherwise, your data warehouse is just a big repository, and it's taking up space. A couple of key slides here. For more information, please go to our blog at blogs.technet.com/mscom. Additionally, my team, the tool team, has a blog for more coding-specific types of things for building your tools and understanding all the different data sources, and that's blogs.mscn.com. BlackMSCOMPS. Additionally, I've got some resources here for the MOM and MIIS sites, the Keynote site if you're interested in doing Keynote testing, and then that logging and application block that I mentioned is up on msdn.microsoft.com with that exceptionally long URL. And if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to send mail to mscomblg@microsoft.com. That is our blog alias, and we do strive to be as responsive as possible on that blog alias to answer people's questions, whether it be via a blog entry or directly via an email response. So please take advantage of that. And with that, I will hand it back off to Chris, and I thank you all for your time.
Well, Scott, that was a lot of good information. I like everything that you went over in regards to even outside of the IIS realm. What really comes from this is the very essence of a web platform. IIS in itself is not going to live alone. When it comes into monitoring, it comes into an enterprise environment, you have to bring in a lot of these different aspects of monitoring these services to ensure that they're up and running, as well as, you said, making sure that you manage your assets and you pull them in and out as appropriate. As the theme has been this week, it is quite amazing to me, at least, to see how Microsoft.com does business on a regular basis. And I want to thank Scott for coming over and sharing a lot of this great information with us. One of the things that I want to make sure that you have the opportunity to do before you run off is make sure you do fill out that survey. Scott and a lot of us are watching that to see if we're giving you the right pieces of information. Did you want more of something or did you want less of something? This is something we really want to hear from you. Plus, you get to win free stuff. But before we get to that and I turn it back over to Jason and get to that survey, I want to go ahead and point out to you two things. Number one, take this opportunity to submit your question. We're going to have a little bit of time left over here, and we can go over those questions out loud and get them captured so that not only are you learning, but everybody else that listens to this webcast in the future can learn from Microsoft.com. But in your screen now, you see a actual browser page that you can go and visit. I want to point your attention to tomorrow's presentation. Tomorrow, we're going to complete this series with an advanced look at troubleshooting and debugging web hosting environments with Microsoft.com operations. Jeff Stuckey, a group manager in the debug group, is going to bring him and three of his colleagues to talk to us about things such as ASP.NET debugging, talking about how do you comb and use tools such as LogParser, as well as Jeff is going to talk about a little bit how they use Server Performance Advisor in their environment. Very exciting pieces of information that you can put together with what Scott talked about today from the monitoring and managing aspect, what Wayne gave you in the change and release management, and what Jeff gave us in the overall configuration of IIS, and then to complete off the series, how they put that all together to make a highly reliable enterprise that on a regular basis gets 99% uptime. With that said, I want to thank everybody for coming to today's webcast. As we said, this is the Microsoft.com Operations Series, a part of the IIS Webcast Series. Thank you, everybody. Make sure to submit your questions. And with that said, I give it back to you, Jason.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Okay. Well, as Chris mentioned, we do have an incentive if you'll stick around and fill out the evaluation that's coming up here in just a moment. You're entered to win a CreativeSend Portable Media Center. We give away 10 of these a month across the webcast program, and you get entered to win by filling out the feedback form that's going to be showing up in the slide area. It comes packed again with some of the best webcasts of 2004 and 2005. So again, fill it out today, fill it out tomorrow. Give us some good feedback on today's presentation. Feedback goes back to Scott, Chris, and the rest of the IIS team to make sure that we're presenting you with good quality information. So take a second and fill that out. If you do have a question, you can type it in down there at the very bottom of the screen. Just type in the question. Hit the Ask button. If you're not seeing that question manager or question and answer interface, go to the View menu and choose Restore Default Layout. A couple of other resources here. If you've got webcast content ideas or you have feedback after the event, feel free to contact us at this link here. This is a web form and escalates right to our production team, so we'll help you with any questions you might have about the webcast program, about resources after the event, archives, that kind of thing. Also, right now they're doing a free 14-day trial of Microsoft Office Live Meetings, so if you're interested in getting in on that, check out that link down there at the very bottom, http://www.microsoft.com/presentlive. Okay, so with no further ado, here is the survey, the evaluation for today's session. This is a web page, so all the links in here are hot. click on Registered Online. That will ask you to confirm your registration information and then fill out the series of questions about today's content. I'm going to, while you guys are filling that out, I'm going to turn it back over to Chris and see if we've got any questions in the queue or something he wants to highlight. Chris?
Well, thank you. Yes, so make sure you are taking the opportunity to fill out that online. It looks like we got some questions. It's you're finally pounding that keyboard, and we have those operators busy back there. The little hamster wheel is spinning, and everything is good. But the one thing I want to ask Scott is, hey, do you see anything good that you want to capture that some folks have submitted throughout the presentation?
Actually, I do. There are a couple of questions that have come up, and I want to make sure that we get that out to the public at large. So one of the questions that was asked is the AI system that I mentioned already built, or is it in the design phase? And actually, it is currently in the design phase. We are hoping to get back on that in the latter portions of 2006. I know that seems like a long way off, but we've got some other bets that we're making in configuration management, et cetera, that are going to eat up some of our time for the next several months. So we do have every intention of getting back on that as soon as possible, but we've got some great ideas around the design, and really excited. It's one of the things that I'm super, super excited to be doing. And that's one of the questions that came up, and Jerry has asked, this may be off the subject, but is Microsoft working on a way to perform patch management without having to reboot a server? You know what? That is a fantastic question, because as anybody in operations will say, rebooting a server is bad. It's kind of the bane of our existence. And we are thinking and looking at how to resolve those problems. And specifically inside of Microsoft.com, we actually have made a huge investment with working with the Hotfix team to peel those things apart and make every effort not to reboot the server, and driving those requirements back into those patch management teams and really get them to understand that you know, just rebooting a server is not an option. It's really a difficult thing and causes a lot of churn on the operations side. And so, yes, we are cognizant of that issue, and we really, really do want to make some huge investments in making that work. Also, we have a question regarding, do you use any third-party tool for data mining or custom development tool, and what is it? We do have some custom-written tools. We do not use any third-party at this time. And we're incorporating SQL analysis servers with our repository this year. In SQL Server 2005, some of the functionality in analysis services is exceptionally robust. And we want to really make an investment in using SQL 2005 analysis services, as well as with all of our products, providing feedback and requirements back into that team to make it more robust for everybody out there. Let's see, what else do we have in the questions and answers here? We have one question regarding, do you run a special build of Cluster Sentinel? And the answer is yes. The one that is in the Windows 2000 resource kit is an older version, and we have customized it and ripped things out and put new things in, and we do actually have an action item to produce a new version of Cluster Sentinel for Windows 2003 and going forward. We do have to step back and relook at Cluster Sentinel as a whole, because the way that that NLB works in Longhorn is significantly different, and Cluster Sentinel is not going to work for that solution. So we really do need to relook at how that's being done. But currently we do run a special build of Cluster Sentinel that is not available to the public.
Hey, Scott, one question I'd like to have you address is the question that asked, would it be possible to get a document on the MOM alerts and events you were using? It looks like the answer is you haven't done that. But can you maybe talk a little bit into how you go about piecing that together? And my last ask is that it would be great if you could post something on your blog or something that tells someone what the custom, how you use the management packs out there, so that they know how to use that in their environment.
Absolutely. That's actually a great question, because there's a lot of mindshare that goes into doing that. We do not use default management packs for the reasons that I specified earlier. And for those who weren't here, the reason is because they are trying to be all things to all people. And what we have found is that while it's very interesting information, much of it is not actionable by operations. And so we do not include the entire management pack, but effectively what we do is we bring a management pack into our lab. We install it. We evaluate all of the things that that management pack is doing. And we remove those things that do not really have any bearing on our environment. You know, so for an example, one of the hardware events that comes in as part of the base management pack is that the fan state changed from 1 to 2. Doesn't mean that it failed. It just changed its state. It went from a lower speed to a higher speed. Well, interesting. Really don't need that piece of information because there's nothing I can really do about it, and there's nothing wrong. So we spend a tremendous amount of time with our platform teams to rip out all of those things that really don't give us a lot of good, solid, actionable information. And then once we've done that, then we export that management pack and we import that into production. Now, as far as a document, we do have some internal documents that we could scrub. And as I said earlier, in our blog post that we did on monitoring and reporting, I did actually respond with all of the performance counters that we collect. It would be a fairly trivial thing for us to put together a listing of all of those events and alerts and so forth. We would obviously have to remove the application-specific ones, but to put together the ones that we take out of the base management packs, and actually I think that would be a great effort because it would give you some insight into what we think is important. Let's see. Do we have any other... Does that answer your question, Chris?
Absolutely. I have one question.
Sure.
SC1 delivered the security configuration wizard.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if this really goes into the overall Microsoft.com environment, but throughout the presentations, I haven't seen a mention of that. Has it been used, and if so, what are some of the advantages that you've seen? If it's not being used, is it something that you actually are going to look at using?
So I'm guessing you're speaking about the baseline security analyzer.
You got it. Okay. Well, not the baseline, not MBSA.
Okay.
This is security configuration wizard, which is a big feature of SC1. That's the ability to really fine-tune your servers and make sure that no services are running that aren't needed, no ports are open that aren't needed, things of that nature. Are you actually, where this comes into the monitoring, is my question is really related directly to it has the ability for you to, on a periodic basis, check to make sure that your server looks the same as what it should.
Right.
And that would come into the monitoring and everything. Are y'all using that at all? If not, what would maybe be the reason?
Well, we are not at the moment. And actually, as part of our evaluation process in the configuration management stuff that I was speaking about earlier, we want to approach that team to see if, in addition to the current functionality that it has, to actually spit out that portion of the baseline configuration manifest that we need and do our auditing in that fashion so that we don't have multiple types of methodologies that we're using for doing our configuration management and monitoring. It's absolutely important that the data that's coming out of that is used, and we do want to capture that. But we'd like to capture it in a more holistic fashion rather than individual piecemeal methods for reporting and managing and monitoring that stuff. So the short answer is yes, we do want to use it. The long answer is we need to do some work with those teams to make that more useful for our perspective and hopefully for everyone else.
Great. Are there any other questions that are coming in here? Let me see how this things are looking. Make sure that you get your questions in. Great opportunity to talk with, obviously, a very influential group with the product group. Sounds like Scott's group is able to give a direct pipeline back to a lot of the different product groups to make sure that monitoring and managing. And I can speak just from being in the IS team and working directly with Windows on a Longhorn perspective. One of the major pillars of Longhorn Server is going to be in the realm of diagnostic and monitoring capabilities. So this is an excellent opportunity for you to get that information in. So shoot those questions in. Why don't we go ahead and take some of these out loud real quick if you want to. Looks like somebody's asking a question about asset management, ad crawls. What objects are you using or looking for, and what disk tool do you use? Can you maybe address that?
Sure, absolutely. So as far as AD crawls, the objects we're looking for in the AD specifically are server-based objects, the ones that we actually have control over. We do absolutely collect also the network switches and so forth, but we do that to be a different mechanism just based off of the host, the data center, and the information that they collect. So our AD crawl is actually performed against our organizational units in the Active Directory, and we're specifically looking for all the server-based objects that are currently reporting and those that have been tombstone. Now, that how the diff gets done is via Microsoft Identity Integration Services. Effectively, what we do is we created a metaverse inside of Identity Integration Services that understands what's coming in, what we already have, and can now synchronize all of that information together so that we get the most complete picture possible of what's currently in the data center, what's no longer in the data center, or conversely, what's in our asset store that is no longer out there, and what's not in our asset store that is now out there. So it really does take some management in that respect. Now, one of the key things that a lot of people run into in this space is server renames, especially when they're not done properly. One of the pieces that is really important to us is that we don't lose history for a particular server, regardless of what application it's associated with. So, you know, what SKU was it ordered on? What was the document that actually shows the absolute configuration of the hardware? Well, if we don't manage and maintain those relationships, over time you start to lose that piece of information. So one of the things that we do when we bring it into our store is that if something is represented in our asset store that is no longer in the Active Directory, then we call that out. On the opposite side of that, if it's represented in the Active Directory but not in our asset store, maybe that was a server rename. So we give our engineers the ability to join that record back together rather than creating a duplicate and losing all of that history.
Well, that's a good answer. I don't know what half of it meant, but it was a great answer.
Sorry about that.
I'm kidding. That was actually good. So a couple of questions. One, they've asked, but I do, in fact, have, I'll make the first one.
Okay.
You said log files. You have large amounts of log files. What logging type are you using in IaaS?
You know, I'd have to check with our web engineers specifically.
Okay.
It actually is. It's not consistent.
Okay. I didn't know where I was going with that is from a monitoring and management perspective. Service Pack 1, slight plug I'll put in there. We added centralized W3C logging,
right,
which allows all the sites just to log to a central log file. I was just curious if you were using that. Maybe that's something that you could maybe blog about because with such a busy site, it might be something that it would be interesting to folks. My second question is with all these products that you're talking about, how do you go about doing backups?
Backups are a fascinating subject, right? Because one of the things that you find really quickly is to back up all of your individual web servers and all of your view routes and all of that kind of stuff really is not only redundant but a waste of time and money. So with our web side of the things, we have our staging servers that are representative of what all of those endpoint objects are supposed to look like. We back up that one. With our SQL databases, you know, it's really up to the engineer on not only the data that we back up, but also the length of time that we retain that data. So we have to be, you know, fairly cognizant of the fact that if I've got multiple copies of this in a read-only cluster, do I necessarily have to create a backup? The answer is probably not, but in some cases it's probably very, very important. And then as well as, you know, when you start talking about PII data, do you encrypt your backups and all of that? And so we leave that currently up to the engineers, but what we want to do is facilitate them to be able to do that directly through the tooling that we create so they don't have to go out to the individual servers. I mean, one of the big things is, you know, if we create a new database on a server and someone forgets to create a backup for it, well, we're making some investments in being able to automate that so that it just wakes up. We effectively have something that checks to verify what databases are on the server. Are they all being backed up? If they're not, let's find a time that is not stepping on all of the others. I mean, while it's not a huge deal, you probably don't want all 100 of your databases backing up on a server at the same time. That's generally a bad thing. So you effectively figure out a heat map of where your most activity is and schedule this new backup at a different time than that. So really trying to get granular in doing that sort of work, and then give the engineers the ability to actually either turn those off because that's not necessary, or even define up front so that we never do that process.
Great. Sorry to throw that at you, but it was just begging to be asked.
Quite all right.
All right.
I love answering questions.
Yeah, we've got a couple of more minutes. If you have any questions, last chance. Go ahead and get those in here. But I'm going to go ahead and read this question off to you, Scott. Maybe you can address it. Does all application in MS-COM use your instrumentation class to log events, or do any of the applications use custom logging? If so, how do you manage the difference between those two?
Ah, gotcha. So, currently, again, this is part of our future bets, and we're actually starting that development right now on that common application logging class. The ultimate goal is that yes, everyone will use that same instrumentation class. The reality of the situation is you're always going to have legacy applications that are going to do it a little bit differently. Does it make it difficult for us to do? Absolutely. Is it impossible? No. We can, just as we do today, manage multiple ways of eventing and logging. You know, one of the things that we want to be able to drive back into the development teams is that if you utilize our application logging class, we're going to give you these additional benefits, which means that we can now service your application at a higher level of service. And so we're trying to incent them to move to our centralized logging class. And so that's going to be a really, really important piece of that. And hopefully we'll minimize the number of outliers that we have, but they will very likely have a slightly lowered expectation on how quickly we're able to react to things.
Great. It looks like we had one more question, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually defer just for the fun of it. How do you sync the metabase? Do you use ISCMG, App Center, or do you populate metabase on each server? What I'm going to do is refer you back to Monday and Tuesday's presentation, short and dirty answer, no App Center, and yes, from a replication standpoint, they do use tools such as ISCMG, but go back specifically to Tuesday and just conversation about how they manage the overall configuration in IS. You'll get that answer if you go check that out. But it looks like it's 1 o'clock. Scott, great job. Thanks for joining us. And thank you, everyone, for attending this webcast. It was very useful. Great job in answering the questions as well, Scott.
Thank you very much. And I do have one comment that I'd like to make. For those of you that are interested, the webcast tomorrow is going to be fantastic. The debug team that we have that are going to do troubleshooting and debugging on MS-COM, these guys are some of the most amazing technical minds that I have ever met. And if you really want to get deep and understand how we do things inside of MS-COM and how that feedback loop happens, I recommend that you actually listen to this webcast because it's a great one.
Well, you stole my thunder. I had it all planned and squared away and ready to go, but you stole my thunder. But that's all good. I agree with you. They are some great minds. Register. Be back here at 11:30 tomorrow, Pacific Standard Time, and we will introduce you to some of these smart, smart people. Thanks, everybody, for attending the continuation of the Microsoft.com Operations Series, a part of your monthly IS Webcast Series. Thank you, everybody, and have a great day.